13 is a brand founded for the creators, the innovators, and the motivators, for the people who get up every single day and strive to be better and leave a positive mark on this world. 13 is a fantastic clothing company, and the people that are behind it are passionate, creative, and some of the nicest people I have ever met. All of their stuff looks great, it's comfy, all the designs are so super cool. 13 has some of my favorite t-shirts and seriously my favorite pair of sweatpants I have ever worn. 13 has been a longtime sponsor and supporter of the CoreyCast, and they wanted to extend their love to you, the listener. So when you check out their website at thur13en.com, fill your cart with some cool hats, hoodies, sweatpants. Just make sure you use the code word CoreyCast at checkout, and you're going to save yourself a little bit of money. thur13en.com. Make sure you tell them Corey sent you. My guest today is my good friend, Rhonda Ackle. She is my go-to referral for real estate attorneys because she is a wealth of knowledge, and because she has wonderful support at her office, and because she does a damn good job representing my clients. Anytime I've had a question or needed support with something, Rhonda's always quick to reach back out to me with answers to stuff that I need, and that goes leaps and bounds. I feel really lucky that I met Rhonda when I first got in the business 6 years ago, because just the relationship that we have built is wonderful. I mean, she is able to take my clients from contract to close with minimum hiccups, and is able to really like explain and break down all the confusing legal bits to my clients. I can't say enough good things about Rhonda. And especially coming from parents of immigrants, she has this passion, right, of wanting to really let people live that American dream of home ownership. I mean, my grandfather came here from Portugal back in the 70s, and I mean, I bet you when he first came over here, owning a home was just a dream of his. And Rhonda has this opportunity to live this experience out day after day. And the podcast really showcased just like how genuine, sweet, and caring Rhonda is with real estate, with her clients, and with other real estate agents. If you are watching this podcast on YouTube, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button and hit that like button. They're totally free things that help this podcast grow to a new audience. My goal with this podcast is to give a platform to people to talk about the things that they're passionate about. I want to give them a positive platform to talk about the things that they're passionate about. I find that when you listen to someone who is passionate about something that they love, that passion leaks into your own life with your own hobbies and your own interests. And that's exactly what Rhonda did for this episode. When I left, got done talking to Rhonda, I felt charged up and ready to go. But I don't want to give too much away. I'm just going to shut my mouth now. Here's my friend, Rhonda Ackle. I'm very thankful that you took the time to do this because I know how busy you are.
Appreciate it. When do you start this? Are
we starting? Yeah, we're going. We're going now. You like that?
Yeah, I didn't know you had started. So yeah, I'm glad to have the opportunity. And honestly, it's, you know, I know you know me now. I kind of like, I'm the finished product, but it's been years in transition getting here. And I think we all are at different points on the road to getting where we are.
Yeah.
For me, it's really exciting to have the opportunity to have my own office because I didn't do that right away.
How long did you wait to get your own office?
I was an attorney for 20 years before I opened up my own office. I know I look much younger, but
yeah, if I do the math, that means you were an attorney when you were like 10, right?
Yeah, something like that. No, I actually worked for a big law firm, came right out of law school. I'm going to be a partner in a big law firm, and was all the whole, you know, within 5 years you'll be a partner, this and that, and then I realized I didn't want that track. I wanted to have a balance between work-life, and I wanted to have children. I wanted to have a family. And so I left the firm, went to a legal services for UAW, which was better terms.
Was it real estate law you were doing when you first got in?
Real estate law. I didn't start out. I started on bankruptcy and creditor.
Whoa.
So I did a lot of, yeah, I was tracking down Hobart equipment for people who were going under and trying to get it back. And so I learned a lot about that as it affects real estate.
When you're like in law school, how do you determine what sector of law you go into?
Don't know.
You don't know.
It's like asking a kid in high school, what do you want to study in college? You don't know. I thought I was going to go into criminal law. I loved my criminal classes. I loved, it was kind of like CSI, reading the, you know, it was before CSI, reading the case law and figuring out what changed, what piece of information made it pivotal when somebody got convicted or not. But then I clerked in the DA's office and honestly doing the appeals and working on stuff, and the crimes against children just killed me. I just couldn't. I was
my friend Anthony Johnson is a criminal attorney, and he was doing animal abuse cases, and it got to the point where he was, it was just too much for him. He just couldn't.
I wasn't sleeping at night.
Yeah,
it was just it was too heart wrenching, and a couple of times I woke up from some nightmares, and my husband is like, because I was married, got married during law school. He's like, do you think this is what you want to do? And I said, no, I don't think I can do this. You know, it's interesting, but I don't think I can do it for, and I respect
for a people. Lifetime.
Yeah. And I respect people who can.
Yeah.
I look at them and I say to myself, wow, I have much respect that you can do this and still, maintain your life and walk out of seeing all these photos or all these and still be, able to sleep at night, because it's sad. It's very sad. So I migrated towards an area of the law where I felt like I was making people happier. I worked at legal services, and then I worked with in-house with a bank for 7 years, and then with another attorney. I spent a lot of time at the courthouse looking up title, trying to figure out tracts and where easements were and where boundary lines were. And basically became an expert in real estate.
So you kind of just started gravitating towards that.
And I enjoy making people homeowners. I enjoy, you know, whether it's the first time home buyer who's real excited about that closing, this is their dream, or whether it's the person who's moving up because their family's grown, or even the person who's retiring. And I was talking to a client who came back to me, and she's made the decision to sell and maybe move into an apartment that she doesn't have to maintain or anything,
nice.
So she can spend more time with her grandchildren.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't want to be worrying about my lawn and everything. I want to spend my time with my grandchildren. And I was on the phone with her. She was actually at Dunkin' Donuts buying donuts to take to see to the grandkids. And it was so funny talking to her. And then she goes, she reminded me, she goes, well, you didn't do my closing, but the other attorney did. And then she went on about how handsome Eamon was in my office for like 5 minutes. And I thought, but it was, when I hung up that phone, I just had such a warm feeling in my heart.
Yeah.
Just like I connected with this person, and she was telling me all of, you know, this whole story of her life and where she is. And I thought, this is why I do this.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm able to help people during that process in their time, in their life, and get them from point A to point B. And then, you know, when I see them, if we ever see them in Wegmans or whatever, they're happy to see you.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not mad at you like they're mad at their divorce attorney or any of the other issues that come up. It doesn't mean that we don't have issues in real estate, but most issues we can solve.
Yeah.
And isn't it great to be able to have issues you can solve? There's things you can't.
Yeah, I know, especially in a real estate transaction, because I feel like when people go into it, they're always like on edge, stressed.
Well, this is where you lay your head at night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have to understand, even in Maslow's theory of, of being able to actualize, being safe in your home.
Yeah.
It's so when somebody doesn't know when they can schedule their movers, or they've got to be out of their apartment, or all that just gets at the core. And that stress, it's like a temporary psychosis, I tell you, but they're temporary.
Yeah.
It gets over. Once we are able to close and they're in the house, it goes away. And they're usually so much happier, and they remember the better part. But while it's happening, it's so stressful. And our job is to guide them through that, to not judge, to listen. But then, of course, I have to explain to them the law.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, I'm not giving them exactly what they want. You know, we are in a consumer-driven world now. Everybody's like, the customer is right. Well, legally, sometimes you can't always get what you want on things, and this is what we can do. So a lot of times, instead of saying, giving people a no, I'll say, I understand, I'm compassionate that this is how you feel, but the law allows me to do this and this. So how about we make a plan based on what I can do?
Yeah.
And so people appreciate that, as opposed to, you know, there were some older attorneys who basically, you know, kind of were the wayside that, you know, you hired me for a reason and I'll just tell you how it is.
Yeah.
People don't want that.
No, empathizing.
They have choices now. I know when I went to law school, in law school, it was 30% women and 70% men. Okay, we're getting there. My son finished up 2 years ago, and it's 60% female now.
Whoa, that's cool. Yeah.
And
he went to SU?
Yeah, he went to SU, and as did I. But what I mean by that is yes, there's more women going into the legal field, but we also have all these generations that have been there, 50 years of attorneys that are already there. And while a lot of them are very patient and I learned a lot from so many attorneys. There also are some very traditional attorneys that, you know, again, and there are some of them still out there practicing, and they're like, well, I'll tell you what you need to know when you need to know it.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want that.
Yeah.
People want to be able to get a status, connect with somebody, and also know that you're listening to them.
How did you learn that approach? Is that just working with other attorneys?
Working with other attorneys and working with clients and knowing that. I actually worked side by side with an attorney for 6 years who had that approach, and I had my approach, and I was constantly picking up the pieces, constantly trying to take the call from the client. You know, I was almost trying to keep the client from talking to the other attorney because while what he was saying was accurate, it wasn't compassionate,
yeah.
It wasn't understanding, and people need to know that they're being listened to, and because it's valid what they're feeling and what they're going through. It's very stressful. So we just take that a little bit more compassionate approach. But again, I've had realtors tell me this and clients tell me this, that just, you know, tell me the truth. Tell me how it is straight.
Yeah.
But if you can do that and still be kind,
right.
Do that and still be understanding. So
it's such a different world. I came from retail management. Mm-hmm. So when someone was upset, like you said, customer's always right. Throw a gift card at them. Sorry, we'll take care of you. But in real estate, sometimes your hands are tied. There's not like I can't just give you a gift card and make everything better.
No,
you know?
No, we can't. We can't just make everything better because, you know, contractually, when I teach the classes, I teach homebuyer classes for home headquarters for the people who are taking the course. I tell people we're bound by that contract. You know, mm-hmm. I keep going over and over that the contract is what binds us. So if there's something that's important, make sure it's in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's important that your client be in by May 1st because they start their job and they can't, you know, they have to have internet and whatever, then we have to put in the contract because attorneys are the worst at negotiating. But when you're negotiating with the other agent for that house, you can put in things in there. We'll make sure it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But for me to come in later and try to add something to that contract,
makes it so much harder.
It's so much harder.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I wanted to also point out, like as we spoke when I came in, I looked up. Today is International Women's Day.
How cool is that,
isn't
huh?
Isn't that cool that you have me on?
Yeah.
Just because I feel like. I was fortunate to grow up in the 80s when everything was a possibility and we didn't have the internet the way they have it now.
Right.
So I just assumed I would become an attorney and that I would be successful and there wouldn't be roadblocks in.
Even when you were younger, you wanted to be an attorney?
I knew when I was in college that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I just went out and did it. And I kind of came on the cusp of that, but I didn't realize until years later that generations before me had so many roadblocks.
Yeah.
You know, prior to the 70s and the 80s when the FICO score came out, a woman couldn't buy a house without a male cosigner.
Which, by the way, was 1970.
1970.
Which is not long ago, right?
No.
Like, that's crazy to me.
That you couldn't even buy a house. And you actually could be let go from your job at a certain point.
That's crazy.
If you were pregnant.
Yeah.
So, therefore, that was a reason why the bank said they wouldn't lend to a woman because you're going to have a baby.
You're going to lose your job.
You lose your job. I had four children and went back to work after each one.
Yeah.
And one of mine is an attorney now. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like, so it's. Just to think that was the thinking.
I'm so glad that is done.
Yeah.
You know, like.
It is done, but we still have a ways to go in the sense that we're still trying to balance, that work-life balance, mm-hmm. okay? Whereas, you know, the generations ahead always, you worked somewhere, you worked there 30 years, you retired, you gave everything to your job. Now it's like, hey, you know, I want to balance my work and my family. And yeah. I also want to be able to have some recreation time and some time away.
Yeah.
And I think coming also out of COVID where people were working from home and, yep. and in fact, their employer had almost 24-hour access to them, we're trying to get back to a little more balance.
Yeah.
A little more balance where, you know, it's 5:30. I'm going to stop answering emails and I'm going to go spend some time with my family because your little guy, I know you've got one, he's going to be grown up soon
yeah.
in a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get this time back.
Right.
And he's not going to remember that, you know, you were working hard and answering emails at 6 o'clock at night. He's going to remember that you didn't go outside and, you know, play with him in the backyard because he wanted to play on his new toy that or, you know, throw baseball back and forth.
Yeah. I feel like COVID turned that dial. I feel like we were starting to get to a work-life balance importance, yeah. and then COVID hit, and I feel like we really turned that dial
yeah,
up.
Yeah, we took a step back, I yeah. think, in COVID because we were trying to maintain some sort of keep the economy going. I think we took a step back, and now we're reclaiming some of that. I try very hard in my office with my team, try to basically, you know, even when I do, like, you know, we had a baby shower in our office for somebody in our, one of our
oh,
team
that's
members
so cool.
had a baby. We did it during work hours because, you know what, when you go home to your family.
Yeah.
How about you coming back to the office for something?
And then, yeah.
You know, you give me your 8 hours and they give me 150% during those 8 hours. When they're home, they need to be home and enjoying whatever they want to do with their own time.
Wow.
So we did it during work time. So we shut the office down for a couple hours. We had a cool.
That's meeting. Awesome.
We got the guys to join in too. It was fun. They had all. We did the baby shower, all the shower games and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
that's
and
so funny.
That. But it was fun to do that.
Yeah.
And
now if this was 1970, that she would have been fired immediately.
She would have been let go at a certain point. In time.
Like what is that? Insane. Yeah.
Because of the fact that you know she was going to have a baby.
Yeah.
Well, and realistically, women, our life expectancy in the 1920s was about 47. It's because women died in childbirth.
Wow.
It was a very real thing. You could die.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we've come a long way since then, and with medical care and everything, we know a lot more about, you know, that you getting back to physical activity is what you should be doing to get your body back, you know, as opposed to before they kept people on
bed rest
and
yeah.
crazy and things like that. So we know more. And isn't that really how things go? Then the more, you know more, you do better,
do
you
more,
know
yeah.
better, you do better.
Yep.
Maya Angelou said, you know, you know better, you do better.
Right.
And that, I think we're constantly in that.
And how do you think the landscape, especially from when you got into, real estate law to now, how's that landscape changed for women?
I think it's gotten better. I think I'm seeing more women attorneys, more women involved. I'm seeing more women in leadership roles with real estate as well. Whereas, you know, there was always a lot of women realtors, but they weren't in leadership roles. We're seeing a lot of that. I'm also seeing the purchasers, the sellers, people, you know, years ago, generations ago, you got married, you bought a house with your spouse. People aren't waiting mm-hmm. to even purchase a house. So we have an increasing percentage of men and women buying homes and not waiting for that life, that thing happened in life to buy a house. That doesn't have to be a prerequisite.
Right.
I had an interesting closing a few months ago where I had three women. Two of them were sisters, and then their college friend all lived together in an apartment. They raised the rent on them in the apartment, and they had a dog. And they said, you know, someone asked people, "Why did you buy this house?" They're like, "One, they raised the rent, and two, we wanted a backyard for our dog."
Yeah.
So then three of them bought a house together so they could have a yard for their dog. And I thought, what a great reason!
Yeah.
You don't have to wait for that life thing to happen to
yep.
buy a house because you can sell a house. Also, years ago, if you had a 30-year mortgage, you had to keep it for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they changed the law and said you could pay it off sooner. There's mm-hmm. no penalty for paying off your mortgage earlier, which then made commerce increase with real estate.
Right.
So you don't have to be tied, you know, you could buy a house, stay in it for 2 or 3 years or whatever, you're relocate or you have a life change in circumstance, you sell it.
Yep.
Housing values are going up, you're probably going to make money on that. You're not going to make money on
the apartment. Yeah.
It's your landlord. Your right. landlord's making the money.
It's funny you say that because when my wife and I, my then girlfriend, when we bought our house on Rita Drive, mm-hmm. we were not married, and my father-in-law is a very devout Catholic, so we thought it was going to be a big hair-raising issue, but he was totally cool with it. And admittedly, her and I bought the house because the backyard was so big for our dogs. Yeah. This is literally the reason why we bought that house in Rita.
And it makes sense because you want to be able to enjoy your life, and home ownership should be open to everyone.
Right.
There should be no restrictions.
And the rent was ridiculous if you had dogs. Like, it was like almost like double.
Yeah,
like, it seemed unreasonable.
An additional fee, and the rent was yep. higher. And
security deposit, a pet deposit. Come on.
Absolutely.
What are we doing here? You know?
And think of all the joy that your pets bring to you. And,
yeah.
And the quality of life.
Right.
You know? I know sometimes I walk in the door and this little guy, you know, Coda, we adopted one recently, comes up to me and he's like, it's like unconditional.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I might have had a bad day, but I forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children do the same thing.
Dogs are the best.
You know, although you've got to take better care of your kids.
Yeah. You can't leave them at home for
by themselves or anything like that.
How many kids do you have?
Four.
Four of them. Wow. Four. Holy cow.
Yeah, I've got, I am a grandmother. There is a 15-month-old little boy that I love spending time with.
Is it wild seeing a younger version of your kid?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, it is. It is. Because a lot of the things that she did, I'm seeing him do now, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, she didn't walk quickly. She was so lazy. She just coasted for a long time. Here's this little guy Rami. He's coasting. I'm like, yep, you're just like your mom.
Yeah.
You know. Whereas the next son, Nabil, I had, he walked at 11 months and freaked me out because he walked so young. So.
Yeah.
But everything he's doing is exactly the way his mother did it.
That's what my dad said. He goes, it's cool to see like little Ashton because he's like, it reminds me so much like when you were little, what life was like. It's almost like very nostalgic for them, especially when you're in a grandparent role. When you're in a parent role, you're just kind of like trying to survive and live, but when you're a grandparent, you kind of get that outside,
you get to enjoy it more. We had a lot going on. My husband, we had the four kids, and then we had my mom living with us, and she had Alzheimer's, and then my father-in-law was living with us, so we had it was crazy. Thinking back on all that time, I don't know how I was able to do all of that and work full-time. But we managed it, and then when things settled a bit is when I decided to open my own office. And I had worked so many places before, I took all that knowledge that I'd learned and said, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. And we've grown. And
was it scary taking that first jump, doing your own office?
Yes and no. I was scared because, you know, I had to make payroll now and all that.
Right.
That's, you know, scary. But
I got other people that I have to pay and take care of now.
I'm responsible for other people. And that, you know, it was always okay to be responsible for my family, but now I'm responsible for other people. But I think once I put that fear aside, the possibilities were just endless. You know, the things we could do, how we could do things, the service we could provide, how we set up what we do. Just the fact that, you know, I could set up my office and give people the benefits that I always wanted as an employee
and still
make money.
Yeah.
You know, make sure I provide so that people who are working with me or on this journey with me have a good place that they're going to retire from at some point in time. So I was able to do all that and still make money.
Yeah. And how long, planning did you do before you officially?
I started out with just me and one other person, and then I sort of started building it. Originally, I partnered with an attorney in Rochester where, you know, we kind of shared expenses. You know, he was in Rochester, I was in Syracuse. That worked good for a couple of years, but then I realized I wanted to invest in technology and things that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
He didn't, so
when was this about, when you had your own?
2000. We were partners from 2014 to 18. We were partners. And then 18, I kind of struck out and said, that's it, I'm done. I've been doing, you know, 2012, I started out on my own.
Yeah.
And then I partnered with him for a little while. I decided, to really invest in technology and everything. And thank goodness we did that in 18 and 19, because when COVID hit, we didn't skip a beat.
Yeah.
You know, we changed how we did closings, but all of my files, everything was in the cloud, everything was, I was able to continue to do business. And,
right.
You know, and I do credit my son for urging me that, to do that. My son, who was going through law school at the time, saying, you know, Ma, you're behind the times, so you gotta do this.
What kind of technology was he chirping?
Well, it was so that we would have our files are all electronic as well as the hard.
Right.
So, you know, we do have abstracts and surveys in paper, but everything is electronically filed so that my paralegal Robin can be working on a purchase file and I can see everything at my desk without having to go get the physical file. Everything is available to everybody. So that when we had to send people home and only 25% could be in the office and everything, people could still work.
Could still work. Yeah. Also, shout out to Robin. I love Robin. Okay. She's great there. She's wonderful.
She is a wealth of knowledge, and I'm fortunate because not only does she work with our clients and on our files, she's working with other paralegals in the office, just transferring that wealth of knowledge.
Is she one of the ones that were with you when you first started your own?
She was my first official hire.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful. I didn't know that.
I had somebody that came over with me,
yeah,
and then there was a part-time person, but then I had to, like, make that commitment to a real hire and a real, you know, at that point. And I remember talking to her. We talked for a couple of months, and I thought, and I worried. I said, can I afford to bring her over? Because she was making, you know, she was experienced.
Yeah.
And I took that leap of faith and made the hire. And I told her, I said, I can't give you what you're worth now, but if you just come with
me. Give me the chance.
Give me the chance. Yeah. We will get there.
Wow. And here you are now in your second location, right?
Yes, we moved to 200 Elwood Davis Road. We were on James Street for a number of years. We were originally in Jefferson Street downtown and moved to James. But James was where we established our office. And it was a great location, except for we were on the second floor. It wasn't accessible for people with mobility issues.
Oh, wow.
It didn't give us the room to grow. And so this came up as an opportunity to move, and we thought, wow, this is great. And we're on the first floor, so people, you know, it was hard. A couple times I had to meet people downstairs who couldn't get in the building.
Right.
And it was, those buildings were beautiful buildings on James Street, but they weren't designed for our
easy access.
Easy access, yeah. And for our needs now.
Yeah.
So it worked out really well. And
I feel like I remember when you did the grand open, I think it was your son said that, like, you guys had to do a build out for that building,
yeah,
right? Like you had it planned and everything
for it. We planned out how we would have our conference rooms, our waiting area. We even have a third large conference room that the building has that's available for events and access. So today we're hosting something there. I actually hosted the first meeting of Black Women in Real Estate.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, Money and Green told me.
Money and Green, we hosted them. So we're able to do that in the larger room. And I think a couple of those, those club meetings where, you know, the business club, you know, the tipping clubs, we've had a couple of those meeting in there.
Nice.
So it's just nice to have that available as a accessible community space.
And have the space just to offer.
In fact, that room, the nice part about that bigger conference room is it's in our office but not part of exact as a separate entrance, so that we're not, you know, clients that we're working on, attorney client privilege, all the things that come with representing somebody as an attorney, we still have that safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then if a community event is going on in that room, it's not actually in our physical space.
That's smart.
Well, we have to protect our clients. That's the beauty of having an attorney represent you. In other states they use settlement agents for their closing, which is fine, but if you have a problem, I have to hire an attorney. In New York, you already have an attorney who's representing you.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the pros and cons between having an attorney in, because we're one of the few, I think it's like us in California,
there's one other,
that's an attorney state,
that's an
right?
attorney state.
Yeah.
I think New Jersey is an attorney
New Jersey too.
The plus to that is we the client benefits from the attorney-client privilege, so they have the ability to talk to the attorney. And I recently had a client who said, I need to talk to you off the record. They weren't sure until, like, he needed to know by Monday from his wife's employer if she could work remotely so they could, you know, okay buying this house.
Yeah.
So we were in our attorney approval stage. He goes, but I don't want to, I think it's, I'm 99% it's going to be okay, but I'll know on Monday. But I don't want to, you know, our
commit
realtor,
and then...
Yeah, our realtor's been great. The lender's been great. I just, can you hold a minute? And we talked about, and I held my approval until, I had plenty of time, till Monday. Called me up and said, we're golden. I sent the approval up. But the fact that I was able to have that conversation with a client.
Right.
And get them to, you know, take a breather, confirm what they needed to know from the employer so they could definitely go through with the transaction. And that's what we have. We have attorney-client privilege.
No.
And you don't have that in many cases. We also have the ability to say, you know, guys, you know, something isn't right here. You know, we could bring a lawsuit.
Right.
You know, we advise people on the law all the time.
Right.
We have one case Nabil agreed to take on. We're very careful with the litigation we take on because we... some of it were conflicted out.
Yeah.
Because we're
a representation, or right
issues. But he agreed. Somebody called for an action to partition. That's where two people bought a house together. One of them decided they didn't want to be with the other anymore, and they locked the other one out.
Oh no! Right.
Yeah. And we got, and they're not married, so we got to go to court. Mm-hmm. Get access and whatever. So yeah,
turns into a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
I always tell my friend, I tell the story, my friend Alec, he does real estate in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and they don't close one on the attorney. It's just him and the title company. Yeah. They don't even get a survey when they buy the house. And when they accept the offer, it's typically about a 30-day window, mm-hmm. But he has been able to close it in 21 days, and the date on the contract is the date that it happens. But that doesn't come with an updated survey, so you don't know what's going on. Probably doesn't come with an updated abstract.
No, they don't use abstracts. They use title insurance policies. They order a title insurance policy, and that's all they get. The thing about what happens in those title insurance states only is, so they order the policy, and it shows an old open mortgage, but this company got a guarantee over that. So then they'll give the other company the guarantee. But no one's ever tracking down and discharging that old open mortgage.
Right.
So you're basically just insuring over and insuring over. It works for those states. We are still an attorney state, and we still get abstracts of title. And Onondaga County, they go back to 1945. And Oswego and other counties, there are minimum of 40
years. An abstract
years.
Of title is what for those listening?
The abstract of title is, it's a document that is... clip together at the top. It's 8.5 by 14 inches, and it.
You even know the size.
It is. Well, I have to describe it to people when they have it in their house. They don't know they have it. I'm describing what it looks like, and it's the history of the property, and it shows all of the transfers. So when I have somebody at home, and I'm saying, "Do you have your abstract?" and they're saying, I think I do." Well, maybe just their deed. So I describe what it looks like.
Yep.
That it's clipped together. It shows this person owned it to this person. Some of them go back to the 1800s.
That's
kind of cool,
yeah.
To look at, especially if somebody's a historian or likes to know the history of the area. And we examine that. And what an abstract is basically, think about the word. It's an abstract. So it's a collection of information. So at the county clerk's office are all the deeds and all the mortgages and all the records for all the property in the county. This is a collection of some of that information about this property only.
This specific parcel, yeah.
Yeah. So we're not going to go and search everything. We're only going to search this parcel. And you start out with what is called a trunk. So it's a bigger, could be a farm. It could be, you know, be the Lawson Farm. And then the Lawson Farm got... broken up, and then we end up with just this particular person. And that's how we get from the exam. So we examine that as the attorney.
Yep.
We'll examine that. We'll examine the survey. And you're right, some areas, even some parts of New York don't do surveys. You go down to Binghamton, they don't do them.
I didn't know that. You
get one, you build a house, and that's it.
Wow.
If the buyer wants one, they got to get one themselves.
That's crazy to me because I've had an issue come up with a survey, which I think... it might have been us we were working together on. This was a long time ago when I first got in, and we found out on the survey the city of Syracuse owned the first part of their driveway, so technically they were landlocked into their house, and it turned into a whole thing.
And you've got to get a permission or a license from the city to be able to access your property. Yep. Yeah, a lot of things are revealed on a survey.
Yeah, it's crazy. You don't get a survey in some states.
I have one right now that we just, a tiny piece of the property, we found out that... we don't own.
Yep.
Client always thought they did.
Yeah.
It was a tiny piece. We talked to the other attorney. We're going to quit claim it. So it's not going to be an issue, but they never, it was.
Had you not done that, you would not have had no clue.
No, there's a lot. And just as an aside too, is you're getting the survey, you're getting actually the map. You're not getting, if you want more, if you want to know, if you want it flagged or staked, that is typically the buyer has to incur that additional expense. Sellers are incurring that expense. But I've had some situations where people have been concerned and they wanted it staked.
Or a large parcel. We had it staked when we had like 10 acres or something, I remember.
I had a client who had her property staked because she was putting up a fence for her horse. The neighbor came over and pulled out the stakes. Well, it's a misdemeanor to take those stakes out.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
So the surveyors are licensed, and they actually, that's why when they charge per stake. They have to make sure they put it in correctly.
Mm.
It's usually about $125 per stake to put it in. So then the surveyor came back out and put them in again. Neighbor took them out. So she went over to the neighbor. They went back and forth. Finally, they sat down and talked to each other. The neighbor thought he had a survey, and what he had was a drawn map from the previous owner. She gave him her survey. They talked to the surveyor. They all agreed that that was the boundary line. She put up her fence. They're all fine now.
Yeah.
But it was just a misunderstanding. But
right.
She took two times had to have the surveyor out there put the stakes in before her and the neighbor worked things out. But yeah.
So once I get that contract signed, I send it over to Rhonda. She gets her attorney approval. And then what happens from there? You look at the abstract, right?
We usually have a conversation with the client before we do the approval.
Right.
It's important that we have the contact information for the client. We'll never send an approval out without speaking to the client just to make sure. If we're the seller, we have to track down that abstract in the survey. So we're going to start making phone calls, asking if you have records from when you bought the property. Again, I'll describe it to the client on the phone to see if maybe they have it at home. We have to find it to get it updated. If I'm the buyer's attorney, I'll tell the buyer, you need to work with your bank now to get your commitment. And I'm going to contact the other attorney to ask for this title work. Okay. Yeah. Once I have the commitment, I'll need that title work so I can examine that title. We'll examine the abstract of title, examine the survey, tax search, tax receipts, any other curatives we need from the seller. And at that point, we order the title insurance. Because the lender's going to need the title insurance, and we always recommend the buyer have it as well, because you're going to piggyback onto the lender's policy and get it really cheaply. And the state insurance department is never going to offer you anything cheaply unless
it's the department's thing. Yeah.
So people don't offer things to you inexpensively. So we usually recommend it, and then we submit that to the lender, and then you're of course giving the lender that as the buyer, you're giving the lender stuff that they need to cure. They ask for bank statements, whatever. You give them all that. They say they're okay on the loan. You get a loan clear, and then if we're clear on title, you have a title clear. And then I tell people it's like trains at the train station, Both of them have to be there at the same time in order to schedule. You could be loan clear, but we're not title clear still.
Nice.
Or we could be title clear and we're waiting for the loan clearance. But once both of those are cleared, we get to schedule.
I like the train analogy. Yeah. I like the family dinner. I'm always like, the bank's at the table, we're at the table, we're waiting for the seller attorney to join us at the dinner table. Yeah. We're waiting for the title work to be done.
Absolutely. And then when we are ready to schedule, we ask the lender for their available dates because they have to meet federal guidelines for when they can close. And then we call the buyer and say, these are the dates offered. We have to check with the seller. So it's really like scheduling an event that all these calls have to be made.
Yeah.
And taking into consideration work schedules and everything.
Oh, yeah, right.
And sometimes you have what are called domino closings.
Where someone's got to sell.
Corey's house. Corey's got to sell his house to somebody. And so all of that has to, or buy, schedule his buy. So all of those have to, so sometimes those dominoes have to be set up.
Right.
The one thing I can recommend, though, to clients, the best thing that they can do to help themselves is, one, use a realtor. Use a local realtor that knows the area. Local lenders. Are lenders that do significant loans in the area.
Mm-hmm. Not only from a knowledge base, but also just the reputation alone, too. That helps, especially in a competitive market.
Absolutely. If you're submitting an offer and you have a pre-approval from an internet lender,
Yeah.
Versus a pre-approval from somebody who's known and does a lot of business. And we have all types locally. You could choose.
Right.
You want a credit union, you want a mortgage banker, you want a mortgage, you want a bank with a, you know, brick and mortar bank. They're all available here.
Mm-hmm.
But you have those two side by side. Which one do you think that seller is going to give greater weight to?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's all those intricate pieces to a purchase offer that people don't really.
There are only so many things you can control in the process. You know, I know that there are a lot of restrictions now. You can't write those letters. You can't do, there's a lot of things you can't do anymore.
Right.
What you can do is put yourself in a good financial position to make that best offer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm seeing is we are getting more balance to the real estate market right now.
Balance in what sense?
For the longest period we were in a purely seller's market. Sellers were able to dictate, and I don't know if it was so much the sellers dictating or but buyers beating out other buyers in offers. So they were getting a lot more for the homes, and the terms were very, very generous to the sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Buyers waiving home inspection, waiving radon tests, flexible on closing date, allowing sellers to stay in the house for time period after, but just a lot of generous terms for the seller just to get them to accept
crazy
my offer.
Yeah. A house just like 2 weeks ago, 14 offers on it. It's crazy.
But we're getting a little more balance. I am seeing contracts come in with home inspection.
Mm. I just sent you one this morning that's got a home inspection on it.
And they're agreeing to do those. I'm seeing contracts come in with terms that are more balanced, I'd say. Because otherwise, you know, we are still buyer beware. That is a law.
You know,
unless the seller knew about a defect and took active steps to conceal it, there is little recourse against a seller. That's
right.
Why the inspections are important.
Yeah, that's the thing that's crazy in this market. I just feel like you get such a short window of time, and especially when you're waiving your home inspection, going against all these other offers. A colleague of mine had this great analogy, Bob. He said, I spend longer time picking out what pair of shoes that I want to buy than some of these people do with a house.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you get in there for a half hour to see the house, and then you don't see it again if your offer gets accepted till your final walkthrough. A total of, let's check, 45 minutes that you get to see the house that you're going to be in for the next 30 years.
And other than the property condition disclosure and with the new revisions as well, the seller doesn't really have to give you very much disclosure.
They could literally just give you a $500 credit and not provide any of it.
After March 20th, it's gone.
Dun, 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 dun.
March 20th, no more $500 credit available.
No matter, even if it's an estate or a foreclosure?
No. Estates, foreclosures, a condo, do not have to give it.
Perfect.
So a trust does not have to. So it's important for your realtor, listing agents to know who is selling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you're not sure, contact the attorney that's going to be representing, see if they can get a copy of the deed.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if it's a trust, then you shouldn't have the disclosure filled out. Okay? I've actually gone back and they didn't realize it was a trust. We figured out it was a trust. I had to revoke those disclosures because they can't give disclosures.
As of March 20th, is that a statewide thing?
Statewide.
That's going to be crazy in New York City, because I thought in New York City they don't do like
any
disclosures,
everybody,
right?
Everybody gives a $500 in New York City.
I wonder what they're going to do then. That's going to be interesting.
They're going to have to give disclosures.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, they're going to. And some of the changes to the disclosure is historical things, too. You can't just say some things you write unknown, but it's like, you know, have you ever received any money from FEMA or had a flood?
Mm.
So people used to think that if you fix something, then you don't have to disclose it was fixed. But if you had a flood and had it fixed, you have to disclose that.
That you got money and
that you had it fixed. You can put all that in there. But there are... I've been urging realtors not to fill those out for their clients. Their clients are to fill them out.
I'm always like, I leave the disclosures when I leave the appointment. I'm always like, look, I know this is crazy and I'm not a teacher, but I'm going to give you some homework when I leave. Mm-hmm. This is the property condition disclosure. Here's your property info sheet. And then I'll have them type up the, I feel like on the property information, try to jam everything that you've done on that one little three-line space is too much. So I just have them write it out, and we'll do it together.
And have them fill that out.
Yep.
And the only thing is, if you don't know, then put unknown. But when I have somebody who has owned a house for 20 years and then they write unknown for for the age of the house or how long have you owned it, like sometimes they put unknown for things like, I'm like, you've owned the house for 20 years. You know it's...
Yeah.
You could write down 20 years plus.
Yeah.
And it's important to be aware of that. But we don't get a lot in New York, and so those inspections are very, very helpful.
Yeah.
I had somebody I know who was a executor for a property that was sold in California, for example, and I got to look at their contracts. He asked me to look at it for them. As a seller, they had to provide the buyer pages of disclosures. Like, they almost had to order a pre-listing inspection or something and gave that to all the buyers.
Wow.
And that wasn't a state. That was California law. Now, we're not there, but we have a little more responsibility than we had a while ago.
Right. If you had a magic wand, you could change anything about real estate, attorney, just the way your job functions, what would you do?
I'd make finding the title easier. If there could be a central, like, bank of abstracts.
Why is it? Is it because the titles are all over the place?
It's so time consuming.
Is it because the title gets held by, like, the bank or whoever?
It depends on the situation. I mean, I don't hold them myself. I keep them with the abstractor.
Mm-hmm.
There were some situations where they give them to the owner. Other situations, the attorney holds them. So it all depends. It would be lovely to have, like, a bank of this is where they all are.
Right.
You know, we recently had a company that was involved in, title company locally, was involved in litigation, and we couldn't access their abstracts.
No.
Yeah. So.
Oh my God.
Finally, somebody got a key, and we were able to get a phone number, and we can access those abstracts.
It's like Ocean's 11 to get the abstract. Jeez.
So if we could make that easier,
mm-hmm.
that would speed up the process, and we could get to the point where your friend in Pennsylvania where they can close in 30 days, because the banks have figured it out. They can get a buyer approved and ready to go in a short period of time. It's the title that slows everything down.
Right. Yeah, that's the one bummer. I wish we had a shorter close window. Alec was like, how do you set expectations for a 60-day window? That's got to be tough. And it's just like constant communication as much as you can, and it just involves more communication.
A lot more communication, a lot more talking off the ledge and calming people down, and then telling them that our contracts, when they say on or about.
It's a baby's due date, right?
Yeah, a baby's due date. The technical law dictionary definition is a reasonable adjournment is contemplated.
Whoa, what in the attorney language does that mean?
That means on or like about. A baby's due date. It's a lot easier to say baby's due date.
Yeah.
But yeah, it could happen. I tell people a 2-week swing it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the seller might be ready sooner, and if we can get them to agree to close sooner, great. But they can go up to without being unreasonable.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how, it's hard to explain, and it's hard to keep people appraised of the situation and calm, because they're anxious to get in. They want to close.
Right.
People are calling not because they want to be difficult. They're calling because they want to close on the house.
Yeah, right, right. They want to close. They want to get in. And it's just stressful sitting there for 2 months twiddling your fingers hoping that it's going to close on time.
Hoping it closes. hoping the seller keeps mowing the lawn.
Right.
And hoping that, we don't get a snowstorm on the day of your closing.
Right.
All the things that can possibly happen don't happen. So.
Now, as me being as real estate agent, what could I do to make your job easier when you're working with the clients?
If you're working with a seller and you're in their house and you are taking the listing and they have access to information, or you even see that abstract of title, bring it to the attorney.
Yeah.
I've had this happen. I've had a realtor drop off an abstract and paperwork to my office on a Monday saying a contract is coming. A few days later, I'll get the contract, but they'll bring it to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm ahead of the game then. If you're working with buyers, the best thing you can do is steer them to a real estate attorney. I know you can't tell them who to go. You've got to give them three names or whatever. But I like to explain to them that going to your cousin that just graduated law school or a friend that is a criminal attorney is not going to help your real estate transaction. We are
specialists. But why is that, Rhonda? I'm going to play devil's advocate.
We're specialists. We know we have access to resources. We have paralegals dedicated to doing this, and we work with the lenders. In fact, my office represents 27 different lenders. In upstate New York, it's often common to use the lender and the buyer as the same attorney, and it saves them money and time.
I didn't know you're up to 27.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, we do everybody.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But an attorney that is in court all the time isn't going to be able to answer your phone calls, your questions.
Right.
They've got to work around other schedules. They may not understand the time constraints that your rate is going to expire in 2 weeks, and we just got the title in, and they'll look at it eventually. But, you know, no, I've got to get it to my examiner immediately. I got to get it to the bank. There's a lot of time constraints that in the process they may not be aware of.
Right.
So,
and also I feel like law is this giant ocean of information and trials and like verbiage and its own language. So it's like, I would much rather work with somebody who specializes in the lake of real estate, not the lake of divorce law, you know?
I would not go to a podiatrist for a heart issue.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
If I've got a problem walking, I'm going to go have the podiatrist take a look at my foot. But if I've got a heart problem, I'm going to a cardiologist. It's that way. I tell people, keep your family attorney, the person you use for all your other things. We're not trying to step on their toes. We're the specialists. We're like the surgeons coming in to surgically do the real estate for you. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have other attorneys that refer their real estate clients to us to
because
do the real estate.
You've done it for so long, and you have the knowledge.
We're keyed up. They're like, go there to get your real estate done, but we'll handle your trust work or your estate and all the other work they're doing, but we'll just do the real estate end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow. What do you think is like the one of the biggest lessons you've learned getting into real estate law?
It never stops being exciting and happy to work with people. I have never lost the fire that you get. You know, I still tear up at those commercials, you know, where the mom and the dad are standing in the doorway and the kids are in the backyard. And then, like, the mom's like, you know, the dad says, oh, it's the first backyard. And the mom says, it's mine too.
Yeah.
I'm like, that kind of stuff, that part of making somebody a homeowner, it's like I get a little piece of that miracle.
Yeah.
You know, every time, and it's exciting.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but for me, like, my grandparents were immigrants, so mm-hmm. I feel like it hits a little bit harder for them, mm-hmm. At least for me, because I remember, my grandfather is famous for telling the story when he came to America, he had, like, $5 and a couple nickels in his pocket. And, like, now they have their own house, which was, like, unthinkable back then. Like, it was not. And I just, I don't know, in very similar to you, I just feel like always filling my cup in this job as well as somebody else's, which is nice.
It's just so that I can make a living that also makes people happy.
Yeah.
And gets them to that place in their lives. I got the greatest job in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to have that every day. Yes, I'll wake up some mornings, know I have a challenging day, but I'm always excited to get to it.
Yeah. That doesn't mean just because it's a fun job and it never is dull, doesn't mean it doesn't come with its challenges.
Oh, yeah. We have challenges. You know, I have one right now where we don't know whose propane tank it is. There's a propane tank half on the neighbor's property, half on ours. We're still trying to figure it out so we can get to closing.
Yeah.
You know, yes, stuff happens, but it's such a, you know, and it's a uniquely American experience. I think, yes, people own property in the rest of the world and all of that, but it's a uniquely American thing and part of what we all as a collective in this country know as that American dream. That dream to be able to have your own place to lay your head at night, or your backyard for your dog, and and to live in a neighborhood where you could raise your family and have a cup of coffee with your neighbor, you know, that's an American thing that I think we all all of our collective immigrants in this country have realized that this is, you know, this is what makes us what we are.
Yeah. It's it's a reason why they call it the American dream, because it's just not, it's a luxury for a lot of other countries.
And in this country, we're constantly striving to make it better and to open those opportunities up to everyone.
Yeah.
And on, as we said in, you know, in the beginning of this, initially, you know, there was restrictions on women owning property or borrowing money to buy property, and we have a history of redlining and all that. But we're working constantly to correct that.
Yeah.
And that's what gives me the hope, because it's not like saying, oh, there's a problem. No, we're like, okay, we didn't do it right before, but we're going to do it right now, and we're going to work on it, and we're going to fix it, and we're going to make it better for the people in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's just like the natural course of history. I feel like we're always just trying to strive to do better, and not even if it's just real estate, but even if it's just like, I mean, man, life is so much better than it was in 1900s when your average age was 40, you know what I mean? Like, versus now. And it's, I don't know, it gives me at least a little bit of hope that for the future that I think there's going to be more opportunity for a lot more people with a lot more diverse backgrounds.
I think so. And we also know, and statistics have shown, that home ownership builds generational wealth. So having that home, building the equity in your home, means you and your generations behind you are all going to be better off financially. So the more people we make homeowners, the more diverse the homeownership market is, the more people that are doing that, the better off we are going to be as a country.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to be building that wealth and that opportunity.
Yeah. Even if inventory is really low, there's still the opportunities there.
It's opening up. I also have seen an increase in trend in new construction. We've definitely got that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we're building more homes. I think people are deciding that, you know, as much as they love their low interest rate on that house they're sitting on, that maybe they want a bigger home. And so we're seeing some come to the market. So it's just a matter of shaking.
It's staggering the amount of people. There's like, NAR did a survey. It was like 45% of people who bought during COVID feel like they settled in some fashion. Mm-hmm. And I think that percentage, actually, I think it might even be like 60.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but it's wild, just staggering people who feel like they settled. And
now they're getting a little itchy and saying, maybe this house is a little too small, or maybe. So they're starting, and I think the lenders are being more creative with their financing. Mm-hmm. Some of them are offering a guaranteed free refinance if the rates drop, and some of them are doing, you know, those 10-1 arms. And there's a lot of ways the lenders are trying to combat the worry that the rates are a little bit higher now.
Yeah.
And they're coming down anyway.
Yeah. So. The Fed said it's supposed to come down twice.
Yeah.
Other than it did uptick, I think literally just like a week ago. But twice more, it's gonna be an interesting market.
Historically, we're still very good.
Still very low, yeah.
I mean,
my grandparents was like double digits interest rates.
I remember my first home. My husband and I bought our first home, and I worked in a law office at the time, and everybody was looking at my commitment letter because it was single digits, because they all had double digits. I was the first one that they saw with a single digit mortgage, and I was.
Could you imagine cheering to get a 9%?
Yeah.
Like that would pull people's hair out right now.
Absolutely. But again, we survived that and we thrived anyways.
Yeah.
And we're going to get through this, and we're going to thrive.
You must be really excited for the future of Syracuse.
Oh, I'm so
excited. I know I am.
I'm excited about the job opportunities, the development that's happening, just the different kinds of it. Not only are we building traditional homes, we're taking buildings and turning them into condos downtown, or we're building.
Brian McMahon's looking at putting row homes down too, like in San Francisco style houses.
We're just all of those opportunities that are happening. It's exciting to see all of that.
Yeah, so, and especially right here in Syracuse, really exciting times.
It is, and people underestimate what we have to offer because they just think, oh, it's upstate New York. We have beautiful weather, and yes, all four seasons.
I'm just glad we don't have hurricanes.
Yep, we don't have hurricanes. We have job opportunities. We have a cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 12 to 14 minute commute to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no I mean, yes, we occasionally have traffic for construction, but we don't have traffic like other places do.
I have friends who came from California, an hour and a half one way to work.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me, Rhonda? 3 hours in the car every day? What?
Think about the life you're missing.
I know. 3 hours to go from like here to DeWitt. Like,
we have green space. We have public parks. Mm-hmm. You can, I mean, you could go to a lake, a river, a hike in Clark's Reservation or whatever, and it's all so close.
Yeah.
So it is a good balance, and I think we are attracting a lot of people who've decided that, you know, the 3 hour commute just is not worth it.
Not worth it at all.
It is. Oh my God. I had somebody I spoke to who said that they chose the house they bought based on how close it was to their workplace. Even though, like you said, geographically, it looked very, you know, this whole area. But he goes, no, if we were on this side of the highway, it would be this much of a commute. And this side would be this much of a commute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely crazy that that's part of their consideration.
Yeah.
And I personally love spring. I love the fall weather.
Yeah, me too.
I love those, you know, everybody likes either summer or winter. I said, no, you know, give me those fall. In between. Fall, where it's like 70 degrees in the sun, and at night it's
nice and cold.
It's just like a chill where you
sweatpants,
just, you know,
hoodies. Yeah. You kidding me, Rhonda?
Oh, you
know, speaking my comfort language now.
So that's what I love about this area, and the leaves changing color, and just the, you know, so nothing is exactly the same every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
I had a daughter, my oldest daughter lived in California for a couple of years, and every day I talked to her on the phone because it's sunny and 85. I'm like, go outside, enjoy the weather. She's like, it's that way every day. I'm like, oh, you know, but I, you know, to me, I'd be outside, whereas here, you look, as soon as it's warm outside, everybody's outside.
Yep.
We don't waste time.
No, we get right outside.
Get outside, enjoy every minute of every, you know, and that's what I love about people here is we don't waste time. We get to things right away.
Yeah. Well, that's also a reason why I like working with you is you don't waste time. You get right to it. So thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
I love working with you, Corey. Yeah. I've loved watching your development, both professionally and personally.
Well, you've been my A1 since I got into the business, since 2018. When we connected, I think it was very similar to what you did just like a month ago in our office. Yeah, you just came in to talk about stuff.
Talk about some changes and that people are seeing. And when I do come to talk to realtors' offices, I like to bring something of value.
Yeah.
I'm like, everybody's there. Okay, they're telling you about that, their services. But no, what can I tell you that changed in the law? What do you need to know to make you a better realtor?
Yeah,
and that's what we generally try to do.
And I was blown away at that, and also I think just coming from grandparents of immigrants, I also respect the immigrant hustle and where, like, just how hard it is to make it in the States. And I think I got a soft point for that, as well as how good of a job you do for my clients.
Always appreciate it. We appreciate it. And the way I look at it is we earn your business with every single client.
Right.
You know, every single client is an opportunity to earn your business for the next one. So they're all important, whether they're buying the $60 house or the $600,000 house. Every single client's important.
Yeah.
So we try to maintain that in our offices as our policy.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Yeah, and it really shows.
So excited.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you doing this, Rhonda.
Thank
you.
Very much.